Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well,
to
do
play
it then.
Play again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should it be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So the evening's football continues, Kevin Caban. We've got a busy show for people, not least because of Brighton versus Crystal Palace, Leicester against Spurs, Watford United and West Brom, Newcastle. And Tim Vickery will join us as well. It is a year on since the terrible plane crash tragedy which afflicted Chapecoense.
Yeah.
So Tim will talk to us about how they've coped a year on. That's on the way in the next 20 minutes or so. The Irish women have drawn nil-all tonight away against the Netherlands. It's a really good result. Both teams had won their opening two fixtures of the World Cup qualification campaign. Yeah. So going away to a Netherlands team which looked very, very good technically and getting a nil-all result. It seems like it was a dig-in, defensive, back-to-the-wall kind
of
performance.
I think second half, I believe it was more of a comfortable performance second half. First half, yeah, they had a few chances, the Netherlands, but I think it's a great result. Brilliant result for the Irish women there, yeah.
Mm. So Leicester 2-0 up on Spurs. Jamie Vardy followed by Riyad Mahrez, two of the best goals you'll see.
Two high-class goals, yeah. Brilliant.
Vardy's slightly better.
I think Vardy's slightly better. Just for pure skill. Mm-hmm. The pure skill. I mean, Mahrez is a wonderful finish. It's brilliantly worked. It's a team goal. But I just think for individual skill, Jamie Vardy's goal is great because so much had to happen. It's Mark Albrighton just clipped a ball into the penalty area over the shoulder of Sanchez, I think it was, and Vertonghen are trying to get back, and Dyer, the three centre halves for Spurs. And Jamie Vardy's awareness, he's going towards goal. He has to recognise the position of Hugo Lloris, and he takes it on the volley, coming over his shoulder as well. The skill in the goal is just, it's outrageous. It's a great goal from Jamie Vardy.
The upshot for Spurs is this pretty much puts them out of the title race.
Yeah, so I think so. What is it now, Joe? Is it 13 points, I think, and then obviously City's game to come tomorrow night.
Yeah.
I think that result puts them out of it now. That's it. Yeah. Fighting for top four. That's it really for Spurs.
Tomorrow night they're 16 points behind.
Yeah, looks that way.
Gone.
It game does, over. Yeah.
Even now, they're currently a point behind Arsenal. Arsenal have a game in hand.
Yeah, it is. And that was the thing. At the start of the season, we were looking at that front trio for them, Eriksen, Kane and Ali. We're thinking, if they're going to do anything, it's got to be really this season, because we'll be looking beyond it and thinking, where are these three players going to go, particularly Kane? And it's just all falling short for them now. And, you know, now they could go on a run, they win 10 games, they're still out of it. That's the thing. It's too much for them to do, I feel.
Manchester United will cut the gap on Manchester City back to 5 points this evening. They're currently 3-0 up away to Watford. We're seeing Matic limping off ever so slightly. Herrera is coming on for Matic. It's a decent limp.
Mm.
I'd say it'd be okay. Ashley Young scored the opener on 19 minutes.
He's done enough.
Ashley Young scored the second on 25 minutes. A brilliant free kick. Yeah. And Martial on 32 minutes. So, I mean, Ashley Young against his old club this evening. Jose Mourinho has been talking about wanting to sign a new left back and a new right back over the next two transfer windows. Danny Rose is obviously in the mix. Young started his career at Watford, funny enough, and made his first senior appearance back in 2003 under Ray Lewington, and became a first team regular the following season.
I remember when Martin O'Neill signed him. I think it was Martin O'Neill signing for Villa, and he paid 8 million. Yeah, and we were like, 8 million for Ashley Young. It doesn't seem a lot now, does it? Of course, but I remember the time, a huge fee for him, and he's gone on to repay that, certainly for Villa, and then of course United now. United paid around 10 from, I think it was, Joe, wasn't it? 10 million. But anyway, I think he's done well. I think he has, by and large. I think he certainly started well for United. He had a few inconsistent seasons, I have to say that. But this season, and even the back end of last season, I think he's done well. And if you're looking at Mourinho in relation to signing fullbacks, I think Valencia at the moment, I think he's probably going to be okay for another year, 18 months at least, really there. I think the left back has always been the position, and Ashley Young, in fairness to him, whether it's been Darmian, whether it's been Blint, whether it's been Luke Shaw, he's never really had the trust in any of those, you don't feel. Now Young's gone in and he's got his full trust, and he's actually playing really well.
Mm. Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that game, but that looks done and dusted. Elsewhere this evening, the kind of curious one we weren't aware of beforehand was that Brighton and Crystal Palace have a huge rivalry, which it's not immediately obvious to a lot of people, including Roy Hodgson, who was a Crystal Palace fan as a boy and had to be told about this during the week. They're 70 kilometres apart. And there was a really good piece in The Guardian today by Dominic Fifield about the rivalry, which seems to have cropped up maybe 70s, 80s, as both sides rose from the third tier in English football together and had a good few ding-dong matches. Chris Hughton's brother broke the leg of one of the Crystal Palace players when he was 29, put him in the cast for 15 months. West Brom, by the way, have gone 2-0 up now, and Newcastle is the latest. So that's going to be a 5-game losing streak for Rafa Benitez and Newcastle.
Yeah, it is.
So Chris Hughton's brother broke the leg of a Crystal Palace player. He was in a cast for 15 months. And it seems like this is a real thing. Like, this is a proper rivalry. Because Ruben Loftus-Cheek was at an event with Wilfred Zaha a couple of weeks ago, a fans event. There were 1,500 fans there. And he was telling the tale that a fan said to Wilfred Zaha, "It's just a random question. How much do you hate Brighton?" And Ruben Loftus-Cheek was thinking, that's a kind of odd question. But Zaha straight away said, he was asked, between 1 and 10, how much do you hate them? Zaha said, 11. I hate them 11 out of 10. And that's when Ruben Loftus-Cheek learned, oh, we hate these guys. So it's their first match against each other in the top flight since 1981. And it's a real thing. It's a good piece from Dominic Fifield today.
I mean, I was saying earlier, 2013 was the first time that I'd become aware of it when they played in the playoff, the championship playoff semi-final. I'd never heard of it. I'd never heard anything. Honestly,
it's made up.
I was like, and I watched the game. It was fire. It was a great atmosphere, actually, both games for that semi. And Palace ended up winning it. They got through to the final and, of course, then went on to promotion off the back of it. But it was something that I was totally unaware of.
Dominic Fifield was saying that all last year the Brighton fans were chanting, "We're coming for you."
Yeah.
And that Selhurst Park, they knew what this was about.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's not bad, is it? What was the one you were saying earlier as well? They changed the nickname so it drowned out the sounds of Palace chants.
Well, Palace are obviously the Eagles.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this. You enlightened me here that Brighton used to be the Dolphins.
Yes.
Which seems like a very Americanized kind
of thing. Yeah, it was a long time. I was told that a while ago, actually, that it used to be called the Dolphins.
Well,
yeah.
So intense is this made-up, makey-uppy rivalry, they went from Dolphins to Seagulls so that they'd be able to drown out the Eagles chant.
Mm. Well, I was unaware that they actually changed it for that reason, but this sounds madness, doesn't it?
It does sound a bit small-time, to be honest. Crystal Palace, I mean, they have other rivalries in London, I guess, but it's all Brighton seem to have. So I mentioned that goal between West Brom and Newcastle. Clive Edwards has it.
It's West Brom 2, Newcastle 0. Albion's second goal scored by the man who's going to be a contender for man of the match here. He's played an outstanding game, the Albion youngster Sam Field. It was a lovely cross from the right from Matt Phillips. Found Field almost unmarked at the far post. He volleyed it in from about 7 yards out. It's Albion 2, Newcastle 0.
Mm. 5 on the bounce for Newcastle.
Yeah, it
losses.
Is. They are struggling, aren't they? Sam Field is one they've been talking about for a number of years. Excellent talent by all accounts, but we've just not seen enough of him. And that was the supposed feel is that Pulis kind of didn't allow him to go out and flourish. And as soon as Pulis is gone, Gary Megson does the right thing and
that
gets him in there.
Pulis for you. That will be West Brom's first win in 11.
Yeah. Good result of the weekend, though, don't forget.
The one last point on the Brighton Crystal Palace rivalry, and we mentioned this in the newsroom, but it's just so amazing. I had forgotten all about this. 2013, this was you first heard about the rivalry around this time.
It was only because it was a playoff game, so it was a high-profile game, and I was watching the match. So, and I wouldn't have been aware of this before that game.
Look, nobody was aware of it. This is made up. This is nonsense. But it was a good piece. So they're playing the second leg at the Amex Stadium, and Crystal Palace arrive into their dressing room, and I don't want to upset anyone, Kev, but they find poo everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's an exaggeration. They find poo.
Yeah.
Not where it should be.
Yes.
And
someone had a crap in the dressing room, essentially, didn't they? Yeah.
Someone did.
Someone took a crap there, yeah. So there you go.
It was alleged that it was the Brighton manager at the time, Gus Poyet, that he dropped his trousers and took a dump.
I don't think that was true, but it was alleged at the time, yes.
Gus Poyet, we can mention this legally because Gus Poyet came out and denied this.
Yes.
He said, "This was not me who did this." And then just to really double down on this point, Poyet wrote an email to everybody at Brighton. He sent an angry email to the club, the staff. So he said, "For some reason, that is still not clear to me, someone during the day had access to the away dressing room and done something terrible, trying to upset everyone related to Palace. To say it in clear English," not that this was needed, "but to say it in clear English, someone had a poo all outside the toilets, over and around the toilets." Which is comprehensive.
That's fairly clear, isn't it?
Sounds like there's more than one.
Yeah, you kind of know what's happened there, don't you?
That does sound like so someone pooed outside the toilets, over and around.
That's disgraceful. Disgraceful, Joe.
He
honestly
said, I am angry that someone within this club could endanger our good reputation and stoop so low, literally.
I've never known such a thing.
Did they imagine that this would affect the Crystal Palace players? Well, it possibly did. It may have fired them up more, and Palace went out and won 2-0. Mm. Poo or no poo. So when we talk rivalries, this is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it's nil all for all the talk of rivalries.
Yeah,
look, when there's that much tension, Kev, you know.
Exactly,
it's hard to play football when it means that much. So, Ian Holloway, I haven't heard from Ian Holloway in a long time.
Mm.
He is having a go at fans for leaving early because QPR were 2-0 down against Brentford, and QPR scored two late goals to draw the game. And the fans had all left. I mean, they're 2-0 down. It's time to go home. It's an even game. And Holloway wasn't happy.
We keep talking about we got to have some character here. We got to keep fighting. And my boys have done that. They've done that. I've been here a year. They've done it. They kept going. And that's all you can do. And half our fans have gone home. So what I'd like to say to them is you should have stayed. Yeah, our boys need you. You should have stayed. Why didn't you stay? Everybody who did, fantastic. Well done. You deserve that as well. But don't go home early. If you don't want to, stay there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not wrong.
I mean, to be fair, a few of the Irish fans I saw on social media were criticised for leaving early. The recent game that we had against Denmark, I think it's probably different circumstances, don't get me wrong. Mm. But it's this old argument, should supporters stay until the end of the game? I've played in front of game in front of crowds where you're getting beat well and crowds walk off thinking, I need to beat the traffic here, I need to get away. Certainly in London, you might want to get on the tube, get away from the ground early, and sometimes it can come back to bite you. That's just the way it is. Do you know what? I understand it. I understand it from a supporter because it's frustration, isn't
course,
it?
Yeah.
You're just thinking, I can't be arsed with this. This is just awful. I'm gone. That's it. I understand it.
You're perfectly entitled to leave.
I'm not so sure it makes a difference on the pitch. I think, you know, if you're 2-0 down in that game like it was for QPR last night, you get your goal, the momentum is coming from the actual pitch itself, on the pitch, it's coming from each other, you're drawing from that. Are the crowd going to influence that so much? Maybe slightly, maybe I'm probably wrong, but it's ever so slightly. I think you're getting yourself back in the game and you just confidence is right on top, so that's where that would come from. I totally understand it from a supporter's perspective when you're thinking, there's no chance here, I'm gone.
Yeah.
I totally understand it. And sometimes this sort of result does happen when you're down within the last few minutes of a game.
Yeah, well, we'll take an hour break and get to Tim Vickery in a second. But I always think, the way people talk about fans and, oh, you're there, you should support the team through thick and thin and you should stay there all the way, you know, and, you know, it's a disgrace that you leave. It's not what real fans should do. Well, I often think, well, hang on. That is you projecting what a fan should be. There is probably 10-20% who say to themselves, well, I don't think it's some vocation. I'm there because I've paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
I want to see good football. I want to see the team do well. I'm not like, I've better things to be doing if you're stinking the joint out and you're 4-0 down. I'll leave if I want to.
Yeah.
And I, like, you criticise me all you want, but I mean, I didn't sign a covenant here.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. I have to say, I'm with you.
I always think it's a bit rich when fans get abused for leaving. Of course they should. They're more than entitled to.
Yeah, I'm with you. Just so you know, Kieran Clarke's just got one back for Newcastle there tonight.
Okay,
2-1 now. West Brom 2, Newcastle 1.
Martial, who scored the third for Manchester United, has just gone off, and Rashford's come on 65 minutes on the clock there. But it's still Manchester United 3-0 up on Watford. We'll take a short break. As I mentioned at the top, Tim Vickery's going to join us now. It's a year on for Chapecoense since tragedy hit them. So Tim will tell us about the last year and how they're doing now.
Off the ball.
In association with AIR. Watch 42 live Premier League games this season on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
Interestingly, Watford have had 62% possession in the second half, but they remain 3-0 down to Manchester United after 67 minutes. Elsewhere, West Brom 2, Newcastle 1. As Kev said, so Newcastle have pulled a goal back away to West Brom this evening. And Brighton and Crystal Palace is still nil all, but there has been another goal between Leicester and Spurs. Let's get over to Shane Pennington.
Leicester City 2, Tottenham 1. Tottenham back in the game, courtesy of their talisman Harry Kane. But it was all about Eric Lamella, who's just come on as a substitute. Struggled recently, of course, with injury. A lovely little through ball to Kane on the right-hand side of the penalty area, and he smashed high into the net past Kasper Schmeichel. It's Leicester 2, Tottenham 1.
Isn't that Harry Kane close to 40 now for the calendar year?
Yeah.
Something like 40 and 39 games or something like that?
I think it might be 40. I think it's 41 that now for him. Someone said that. I think Shearer...
Well, then it's 41 and 40. He's one ahead of his per game.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think Shearer has the record across the calendar year, and I think he's chasing Shearer now for that record. Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what Shearer's record is?
Top of my head, I think it's around 44. I think it's around that. Yeah.
We'll double check it outside as we speak. But Tim Vickery is on the line, waiting for us. Evening, Tim.
Evening. You know, I got in trouble last time I spoke to you.
Oh dear. What'd you do?
Yeah, you might remember, Joe, I told you the story of my stepdaughter being kidnapped in Peru.
Not something you tend to forget.
I listened to the show. Now I was listening to you going, oh my God, what's happened? It was unreal.
Well, I didn't know this, but my stepdaughter, she's got a mate in Ireland who has a house over in Brazil and comes over to Brazil from time to time and got to know her during the World Cup. I didn't know anything about this. And he was listening, so he kind of, Facebooked her. Yeah, congratulations to him. So he Facebooked her with the news that I've been talking about her. And she didn't mind, but her indoors, you know, me better half. I got a 40-minute dressing down, you know, your idle gossip mongering and telling tittle-tattle tales. And I had to remind her, well, you know, that airfare up to Peru, that didn't come out of your pocket, that came out of mine. So, you know, you've strained relations in my household, Joe Malloy.
Wow. Well, look, we apologise, but of a quiet day, we want to do a piece where you and your daughter, your stepdaughter, come on and tell us the story in detail. Some quiet evening.
Yeah, she doesn't speak English, so we might struggle with that a little bit. I'll interpret, and I promise to interpret faithfully and show myself in an excellent light.
Yes, yeah. Tim heroically kicked through the door, muscle bound.
Liam Neeson style. Taken.
Oh dear. Okay, so how do we get back on to Chapecoense? It's a year on from Chapecoense, Tim. So we read your piece, which was really good, summing up the past year. So where do you want to start?
I think I want to start with the journey on the way up, because you know I can remember the whole thing so vividly. It's one of those times when you know time moves at a different speed, and as they were making their way up to Medellin for the night of their lives. You know, this is a little small town Brazilian club who 10 years earlier had not even been in the top four national division of Brazil. And they had become the first Brazilian team in 3 years to qualify for the final of a continental competition. It's a remarkable achievement. Mm. And as I was doing a radio report and talking about them as they made their way up. Now, their story hadn't really played that big in Brazil while it was happening, because the nights when they were qualifying were the same nights as much more bigger traditional Brazilian teams were playing in the domestic cup. Right. So not a lot of people were paying a lot of attention, but I was paying a lot of attention because my focus is much more kind of continental. And it was a fabulous story that was unfolding. It was a workmanlike team with one really classy player, a fellow called Kleber Santana, who played in Spain for Atletico Madrid. And I really thought he was going to play the game of his life. You know, I thought he could tip the balance. So I did this radio report and I went to bed thinking, you know, tomorrow I'm going to wake up and I'm going to write a thing about Kleber Santana, experienced player in his 30s. He's going to play the game of his life. And then just 2 or 3 hours later, I got the phone call saying the plane has gone down. Ran to the TV and to the internet to try and get details. And from then, it's like time playing lots of tricks with you, because on the very first news that we had, there are survivors. So, you know, you think it's made some kind of forced landing or something like that. Mm. The local authorities have asked for anyone in the area with a kind of SUV type vehicle that can cope with rugged terrain to get out there and help ferry survivors to the hospital. So you're thinking then, well, this is a tragedy, but maybe not a total disaster. And I saw with some alarm there were 21 journalists on board. I knew a fair few of them, and I had a mate. One of them was a mate of mine. But at this point, you're thinking, well, you know, maybe it's all right. Maybe it's, you know, it's come down in difficult circumstances. So I sent him a text message, and then the phone started ringing, and I'm doing radio reports and TV reports. And then I go off to do the TV show, where I got to know this mate of mine. We used to do the TV show together. Mm. And during the course of it was something like 3 or 4 hours that we were on the air, you know, the news, it kept on playing tricks with us, because the goalkeeper, Danilo, who was the absolute hero of the story, his miraculous saves that ensured their qualification for this game, he was alive. So he's taken to hospital alive. So maybe there are others. And then we had the news that Danilo had perished. Yeah. And then the search is called off. No more hope. It's all over. And then they find another one. They find Neto, the centre-back, who is about to resume his career. So they found him alive. Maybe there are others. There were no others. So, you know, our hopes kept on going up and coming down and going up and coming down. And what it must have been like for the families of those involved. Mm. And they will, I'm sure, remember those moments for all of their lives. I also remember the quite magnificent gesture that came spontaneously and very quickly from the Colombian side, who Chapecoense were going to meet, Atletico Nacional, who said, look, give them the trophy. Give them the trophy to honour the memory of those who died. And another thing that just really comes to the fore is when the game would have happened, Atletico Nacional, they threw open the gates of their stadium, and they had an absolute packed house in there and thousands outside the stadium with paying a really heartfelt service to these people who had died. The only connection between them being this game of football, which was to have taken place and didn't take place. Right. And it struck me as such a powerful symbol of a side of football that I don't think we talk about enough, which is the work that football does to form international friendships. And the part that affected me most, I think, it was the wife of Fadi Diaz. Fadi Diaz was a left back of Atletico Nacional, and his wife was talking and saying, you know, every time, you know, because of our husband's profession, every time they get on a plane, we have this worry. So we share the tears of the people in the city of Chapeco and in the people of Brazil. So I've got lots of very, very vivid memories of the events of a year ago.
Yeah. And a last point on the events of a year ago before we jump to how Chapecoense are coping now. The cause of the accident, has that been firmly established?
Well, the investigation is going to go on for another 6 months. It's a very shadowy airline that no longer exists, La Mia. The worrying side of this is in a short time, this airline had made considerable progress ferrying around football teams around South America. That's what it was specializing in. South America is huge. The travel connections are not great, so there's a real kind of gap in the market for a kind of solution provider, if you like. And it is clear that this airline were cutting corners. And one of the reasons that there were survivors is that there was no explosion because there was no fuel. And what clearly happened, and this was pointed out before the plane took off, was the plane was operating at the very, very limit of its fuel capacity. And maybe there were headwinds that meant that fuel capacity wasn't quite enough to get them to the airport. Now, you must travel with an excess fuel capacity for, you know, at least 40 minutes of the possibility of not being able to land. And you look at the history of this airline, they took the Argentina national team, Lionel Messi and all, on a long journey that was close to the fuel capacity of that airport, of that aircraft. So that's it looks as if that this was an accident waiting to happen.
So 77 on board, 71 lose their lives. The three players, you mentioned the left back, Ruchel, he returned to action in August in a friendly against Barcelona. The defender, Neto, is working towards trying to be part of the squad next year. And the goalkeeper, Jackson Fulman, he lost his right lower leg in the crash. He's studying and taking courses to become a director of Chapecoense and maybe talking about becoming a Paralympic swimmer as well, which is very impressive. So those three guys are trying to piece together their lives. What have they said about it, or what, you know, how are they coping?
What they do a lot of ambassador work for the club, and they're coping in the way that I'd expect any of us would cope when you go through a situation like that. You give value to all of those little things in life. You know, when Jackson Farman was today was saying, you know, the value that he gives just being able to kind of walk down the road. And the sadness that he feels that those friends that he lost are not able to take that little journey with him. So I think that's the only way that you can respond to something like this, to give value in all of this time that we're given.
Tim, what about the rest of the team then? Purely from a footballing perspective, how did they rebuild the team and the squad? What length did they go to try to get the team and the squad back together again then?
Well, they had to rebuild entirely from scratch. There is a lot of turnover in Brazilian football at the end of the year anyway. Obviously, this was an exaggerated version of that, but the turnover is quite big. Brazil's calendar, the way that domestic football is organised, is fairly disastrous, but it came to Chapecoense's aid because and their priority was retaining their first division status. The idea had been floated from other clubs that maybe they should be protected from relegation for 2 or 3 years to give them time to rebuild. And the club, to its enormous credit, said, no, this doesn't exist. This doesn't happen. We don't want this. We want to stand or fall by its own merits. And it's a lot of that mentality that had got the club so far so fast. Other clubs loaned them some players. They were a very methodical club, and the coaching staff who had passed away, because the entire coaching staff were wiped out in that accident, they had left notes of players who were future transfer targets. So the club followed that up. And that few months of breathing space that they had with the first division not actually starting in May, that gave them some time to get back on their feet. And extraordinarily, after the early rounds of the Brazilian Championship, exactly 6 months to the day after the crash, they were top of the Brazilian Championship. Now, obviously, that was a false position. They weren't going to be able to stay there. They're competing with clubs with much, much more resources. And they had some hard times before a spurt at the end ensured their first division safety. But those points they picked up at the top, at the start of the campaign, were absolutely vital. Now, what remains to be seen now, because they represent a small town, what remains to be seen now is whether they can retain this momentum. And they've channeled so much emotion, you know, the emotion of what happened a year ago. They've been able to channel that positively. But can you do that year after year? Can they keep punching above their weight so that this story doesn't go away?
Just bear with us 1 second, Tim. We have a goal from Vicarage Road. Nigel Bidmead.
Watford have pulled the goal back. It's now Watford 1, Manchester United 3. It came from the penalty spot. Troy Deeney, a second-half substitute, slotted past David De Gea in the United goal. Deeney's second goal of the season. Watford 1, Manchester United 3.
So elsewhere, with 13 minutes to go, it's still West Brom 2, Newcastle 1. It's into injury time, meanwhile, between Brighton and Crystal Palace.
Just nil finished, Joel. Sorry, it's finished. 0-0, yeah.
Okay. And it must be very close to finishing as well between Leicester and Spurs. It's 2-1 Leicester.
Yeah, 5 minutes into injury time, that.
Is it? Okay. So Spurs chasing frantically for a goal. By the way, that Alan Shearer point you mentioned. So it's just Premier League goals we're talking here. Harry Kane has 31 Premier League goals. Shearer's record is 36.
Right, sorry, yeah.
Blackburn,
we were going a bit higher, weren't we? I think that, yeah, Premier League, yeah.
Premier League,
we were saying 40, but that's way too high, isn't it? Yeah. I think, of what you're saying there, I think it's all competitions. Though. I think he's
41
he's,
all competitions, 31
yeah.
Premier League.
Yeah, that's
Shearer's
great.
Shearer's 36.
He's fine,
so
yeah.
He's got a few weeks to try and catch Shearer. So Tim Vickery is with us talking about Chapecoense a year on. Has it been, I mean, obviously it has been an emotionally draining year for the club. I suppose what I meant was, how have they been received at grounds around Brazil? Have they had to face almost minutes of applauses and vigils and guards of honour at every game? Or did Brazilian football get to a point where it just got on with games against Chapecoense as normal?
Yeah, it did, which was probably good for the club.
Yeah.
You know, and there's only so much of that that you can take. And I think only so much of that they would want. There is a low point as well. It's something which I found really deeply depressing because I loved that thing of them uniting the continent. I thought that was terrific. When they went out of the title that they'd been awarded last year, the Sudamericana, the Europa League equivalent, when they went out, there was some controversial refereeing, although I think the referee got it right. It was a referee from Peru. And Chapecoense's centre-forward, Wellington Paulista, who had a brief, strange and unsuccessful spell at West Ham, afterwards he said, you know, they've sent this referee from Bolivia or wherever to rob us, and it's an outrage. Well, the referee was right, and he wasn't from Bolivia, he was from Peru. And it's certainly prejudice, and whether you might call it racism, I don't know, but it left a really ugly taste in the mouth. Given the fact that Chapecoense had done so much to bring the continent together, and I was disappointed. I thought the club should have taken disciplinary action against that, because I thought that was something which contravened the entire spirit in which Chapecoense have come back after that disaster.
Tim, I spoke about playing personnel, how they got the playing staff back on the pitch. What about off it regarding staff, managerial, coaching positions, even maybe higher up as well, people that had lost their lives throughout that club? How did they replace the various positions throughout that club as well?
Well, it's not been easy. And one thing which has caused a little bit of tension is relations between the club and the families of the victims. And the families of the victims have two separate associations. One is looking at kind of day-to-day running costs, you know, school fees for the kids, medical bills, stuff like that. Another is looking at the more strategic and legal questions. And obviously, one of the problems that these the families of the of those who perished had earlier on was how to dialogue with a club that had lost so many of its directors. You know, a club that was trying to get itself back on its feet, that had so many different priorities at that time. So relations on that score have been a little bit strained. And the whole question of legal liability, how liable are Chapecoense for having hired this this airline? That's something which still could cause some conflict. So it has been difficult for them to kind of cover all of the bases. They promoted from within where they could, but they just had to bring in from outside as well. And what it seems is that those who've come in from outside, be they directors, be they coaches or whatever, have very quickly found the spirit of the thing and helped the club in this task to rebuild itself.
Kev, you side there?
Another
goal.
It's now Watford 2, Man United 3. Brilliant. The brilliant Decore, who's been so good this season for Watford, has just scored a brilliant goal. Lovely cross, just drilled in from the right wing, and he just arrives on the edge of the penalty area and strikes it brilliantly on the half volley into the corner. Lovely strike from him. So what a goal that is, yeah. So it's 3-2 now to Man United. Watford back in this game.
Okay. And it has gone full time between Leicester and Spurs. That one has finished 2-1. To Leicester. That's a third straight loss on the bounce for Spurs in the Premier League away from home, and United have 7-8 minutes to see this one out against Marco Silva's Watford as he fist pumps on the sideline. So I'm not surprised the families maybe aren't best pleased, Tim, when you mention some of the things about the airline, like flying, you know, at the limit of your fuel capacity, or like right at the very minimum requirement, doesn't sound like best practice, I guess, and we'll have to see what the investigation brings out. But they had reached a point, you said, where they're flying the likes of Messi around. So, like, would people have been kind of raising eyebrows at this airline pre the disaster last year, even, or is it has that all come out in the wash?
It's come out afterwards.
Yeah, okay.
And Comnibol, South America's UEFA equivalent, were very quick to say no, we weren't recommending this airline to anyone. You do wonder how this airline were able to make so much progress so quickly. There's a woman who worked in the air authority of Bolivia, Celia Castillo, who, when the flight plan was given to her, and she pointed out that this flight should not be allowed to take off because it doesn't have fuel to cover any kind of emergency. That woman has subsequently spent a year in almost in hiding in Brazil because she's worried for her life, because this airline had the protection of influential people in Bolivia. So there are wow, more chapters to be written in this story. It is because when you hire an airline, and you don't think that the pilot is going to kill himself in this way. The pilot was a co-owner of the enterprise, but it looks very, very much as if the pilot was thinking with the head of a business director and not that of a pilot. You know, he's cutting corners. He thinks he can get away with it. You don't have to get things very wrong, and it ends up in a tragedy.
Wow, that's extraordinary. So long-term Chapecoense, like, it seems it would always be a big ask for a small town.
Sorry, just seen an unbelievable goal from Jesse Lingard as well. Honestly, what a goal from Jesse Lingard.
I'll have to see it to believe it.
He will, honestly, Joe. He's had a dribble from way inside his own half. He's beat about three players and then put it in past Gomez. What a goal.
4-2 Manchester United. We're awaiting a replay.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Tim, but this is...
No worries.
No worries. Great stuff.
I'm just disappointed, Kev, that he didn't make that same noise after a chance that Llorente put over the bar for Tottenham, because that was the equaliser right there. As a Tottenham fan, I managed to keep it quiet then and talk about Chapecoense, but inside I was thinking, why on earth can you put that a foot lower?
Okay, he's got the ball. He's in his own half. He's beaten one man. He's half beaten another.
He's beaten two men, Joe. He's driven from maybe 50, 60 yards out. He's well inside his own half.
It's exaggerated, Tim. Don't worry. But 4-2 Manchester United.
Joe's got a bee in his bonnet over Jesse Lingard. That's all you need to know, Tim, anyway.
So I guess the last point is, it was always presumably going to be difficult for a small-town provincial club who had risen through the ranks so quickly to maintain that long-term. And that must be doubly difficult now. So, like, long term, do people still expect Chapecoense to struggle, or have they kind of got some foundations in place here?
I would be so full of admiration if they're still a first division outfit in 3 or 4 years.
Right.
You know, we've seen some of this. There was a team at the turn of the century called San Caetano, a tiny team surviving on gates of around 2000 that managed to be among the best teams in Brazilian football for 2 or 3 years. They got through to the final of South America's Champions League, the Libertadores, and only lost on a penalty shootout. You can do it in the short term, but surviving on small resources in the long term, that's a really, really big ask. So if we're doing 5 years' time, still celebrating their first division status, they will have done astonishingly well.
Okay. Tim, thanks for all that super stuff.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Cheers.
Tim Vickery there with the story of Chapecoense.
It's an amazing story, isn't it?
A year on.
Since then, and I know that obviously the tragedy's come about, but it's just what's come about since, you know, the plane flying on very limited amount of fuel and everything that's come about for it, protection from government. It's, you know, you do feel as though there would be more to come from this one further along the line, don't you?
Yeah, I hadn't realised the co-owner was the pilot.
Yeah, I found that one out today for myself. It's like, it's crazy, isn't it? Crazy stuff.
And the employee saying she didn't approve of the flight plan given the fact that they didn't have enough fuel for an emergency is kind of a frightening thought considering what happened, and she seems to have been in hiding. So, yeah, extraordinary stuff. Another 6 months, Tim said, before the investigation is complete. So Jesse Lingard has gone off to a pat in the head from
Jose Mourinho. I can't believe you're actually dismissing that goal.
It's fine. It was fine.
It was fine. So, Joel, seriously.
He didn't have to
He beat two men.
He picked the ball up in his own half. He didn't have to beat a man until he was on the... He was about 25 yards from goal. Yeah. He beat one, fair enough.
If the listeners are trying to imagine this, he picks the ball up beyond the centre circle in his own half.
Yeah.
So he has to run probably, I would say, 70 yards.
He's a professional footballer.
Oh my God.
It's easy to run. He didn't have to beat anyone for the first 55 yards of the run.
And there's also 10 other outfield professional footballers trying to stop him.
No, there were four backing off the whole
way. Well, I'm just talking in general terms.
Don't get angry at me.
There was maybe five or six. Joe, honestly, sometimes you just talk absolute, honestly, absolute garbage.
Look, it was a very good goal.
Don't
obviously.
Sound like Nathan Murphy. Do not sound like Nathan Murphy.
The worst
or
thing
Dave,
ever
or you might sound
me.
Like Dave McIntyre.
It's worse.
Could be even worse.
Wow. Clearly, it's a fine goal.
It's a very good goal,
but
a brilliant goal.
Pick of the bunch tonight, Jamie Vardy.
Jamie Vardy's and Mahrez is right up there, but also Decorey's is a good finish as well for Watford.
Okay, so a distant fourth.
And that's a young free kick.
So a fifth. Fifth best goal of the night, Jesse Lingard.
The quality of the goals tonight is outstanding.
It does highlight just how good the Premier League is at times, like how good some of these individuals
are. Yeah, and do you know what it is? And sometimes, you know, we do see some bad games. Don't get me wrong, we see some bad games, but Dave come in after the weekend, that Huddersfield Man City game, and we saw a really good game there as well. So, yeah, we do see good games.
It's down to what? Injury time between Watford and Manchester United. It's now 4-2 in injury time. There's been another goal between West Brom and Newcastle. Let's hear about it. Clive Edwards.
It's West Brom 2, Newcastle United 2. The equalisers come with around 8 minutes to go. It was a free kick given away by substitute James McLean. A very tight angle just outside the area. Taken by Matt Ritchie to hit left foot low and hard. It was going goalwards, but it took a fierce deflection. It may have been off the foot of Kieran Clark. Not too sure there, but it's gone in the back of the net. It's Albion 2, Newcastle 2.
It's an own goal off Johnny Evans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. He just puts it in with pace. Johnny Evans can't do a thing about it. I think it's actually going wide, and it just deflects off Johnny Evans, who's beyond the near post, and Ben Foster in goal's absolutely no chance. Can't react to it.
That's a few minutes to go there. That is a disaster for West Brom, who were 2-0 up this evening and had not won a Premier League game in 11. So we'll take a short break. We have full times for you from those two games. And confirmation again, Brighton 0, Crystal Palace 0. After all the hype we gave this game.
Yeah.
And Leicester have beaten Spurs 2-1.
Off the ball.
In association with AIR. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
So, four games this evening in the Premier League. Let's get Shane Pennington's take from the King Power Stadium. Leicester 2, Spurs 1.
Leicester City 2, Tottenham 1. Once again, more drop points from Tottenham as some old rivals come back to haunt them. Jamie Vardy volleyed over Hugo Lloris for Leicester's first. Riyad Mahrez curled them a beauty from 20 yards just before half-time to make it 2. Tottenham got back into it when Eric Lamella found Harry Kane inside the area for him to smash home, but they missed some good chances in the second half. Both Kane and Llorente volleyed over when he should have done better. Leicester 2, Tottenham 1.
Yeah, suddenly all about the Champions League for Spurs. Meanwhile, the full-time Adam Lindsay was at the Amex watching Brighton and Crystal Palace.
It's finished Brighton 0, Crystal Palace 0. A game that promised much but delivered very, very little in the end. A superb save from Matt Ryan in the first half, denying Benteke and Zaha, and also chances for Brighton coming the way of Stevens and Dunk, but none of them hitting the back of the net. This rivalry has finished Brighton 0, Crystal Palace 0.
This rivalry.
I'm glad he called it rivalry, not a derby.
Yeah. Rivalry. Not a poo in sight tonight, Kev.
Yeah, no. Good. Disappointing. No sending off, nothing, you know. Wanted a bit of...
Nothing in this game.
Bit of needle.
Brighton spent the whole year chanting, "We're coming for you."
Yeah.
And then they draw nil all
well,
at home.
Do you know what? Sometimes you can get those real tight, edgy derby games, you know. You don't like that. Usually you might be thinking you get those derby, those games that have got true rivalry, Joe. You usually see goals, but no, that's not a bad result.
Nil all. So I have to agree with Kev about Watford and their sound fans. So you were saying earlier on, you always get a nice feel.
Just the club. The club in general. And the fans as well. I didn't maybe mention that as well before, but the staff around the ground, the supporters, really,
very welcoming.
Really, yeah, really welcoming, yeah.
The Kev, come on in. How are you? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that wasn't just, of course, not just me, but everyone that came in, because you were sat near the entrance as well, and everybody that came in got the same welcome. Just a really nice feel to the place, yeah.
Because I was told you went up and said, "Do you know who I am?"
Ah, you're such an arse. Honest to God.
Where's the VIP room?
Oh.
So anyway, Jim and Claire says, went there as an away fan. I sat in the home end.
Yeah.
Okay. Just about to sit down. This 6'2" bloke in the next seat took hold of my arm. He said, "Don't sit there." And then he proceeded to take a towel out of his bag and dry my seat. This can't be true. And then he bought me a cup of tea at halftime. Jim, I've done 75 grand nowhere else like it. That's a tall tale.
That is, that's unbelievable if that's the case, yeah.
Bought you a tea at halftime.
He's messaged in. It's got to be. It's got to be true, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, maybe.
You're dismissing the listeners now. Honestly, your ego. Seriously, Joe.
No, look, I was burnt last week where a listener... text in about where was it? Peru?
Yeah.
Bolivia. Someone texted in and said that they'd been in a certain area. I can't remember the context or what it was, but they went to the trouble of texting in saying that the people there were brilliant and this person had lived there, but the only reason this person had left there was because the oligarch in the area, he'd been having an affair with that oligarch's mistress and had to, and was run out of the town. And then it turned out it was a complete lie because he even got the country and the town all mixed up. So since then I thought, well, I just don't trust any of these people. But Jim in County Clare, at least he's put his name to it, because the Bolivia.
I'm with Jim.
Mistress.
I'm with Jim. Totally, it is. Honestly.
So Vicarage Road, nice place. Okay, good. I didn't realise that. So it's gone full time between Manchester United and Watford. So it's back to 5 points ahead of City's game in hand.
Yeah. It's good. I mean, you think City will win tomorrow night. Yes, that's almost a given, really, the way that they're playing at the moment. But United have got to maybe hope that they can slip up and then they can do something themselves. But tonight, I just think, I think we haven't seen that sort of performance, certainly from a goal-scoring perspective. Of course, yeah, Watford getting back into the game. But United, you almost feel they needed a night like this tonight. Going to Watford, who have been playing really well, get the 3 goals up in the game. Put to bed, albeit they nearly got themselves back into it. But that was the one statement United need to make tonight, and it was a great win for them, yeah.
Their next game is Saturday evening. It's the evening game, and they're at the Emirates against Arsenal. Peter Cech came out today and said, "We're only 13 games in." He thinks this Arsenal team can challenge for...
Watching them at Burnley at the weekend, I don't see it now. I had hope for them after the Tottenham game, and I thought, yeah, this was the performance that I'm expecting from them. And they go to Burnley. They didn't deserve to win the game. It probably was a penalty, but they didn't deserve to win it. And I saw an Arsenal, I don't know, maybe it was the mindset. You might laugh and just say, well, they won the game, yes. But the way that they played in the game, the way that they allowed Burnley to dominate them physically, I just can't see it. It's put me off them even more after the weekend.
Right. It wasn't like a new dawn when they beat Spurs then.
No.
And so before we go then, West Brom 2, Newcastle 2. West Brom had been 2-0 up in this game. Newcastle have lost, well, it's stopped now, but they had lost their last 4. They were about to lose their 5th in a row under Rafa, his worst ever streak as a manager. And West Brom haven't won in 11. So
yeah,
you suspect neither... thrilled with a 2-2 draw, but yeah, ultimately, I mean, it's, you know,
as well, there was talk as well today. Rafa Benitez linked with the Everton job. I saw a mention for today. I can't see it. I don't know if Evertonians will have him. As for West Brom, it still looks like the Alan Pardew deal. It looks as though they're in serious talks with Alan Pardew. That will be done. So there are a number of talking points around the Premier League at the moment regarding the managerial positions, yeah.
Okay. We are done for this evening, Kev. Thank you, as ever. OTB AM tomorrow, 7:45 as usual, with the lads, Periscope, Facebook Live, Twitter, all the various outlets there. Earlier on, we asked you in which year was Warren Gatland named head coach of the Lions? When did he first take his first Lions tour? The answer, of course, was 2013. Congratulations to Enda in Rathmines, Gavin Walsh, Christopher Bulger and Miriam Duffy, who each win a pair of tickets to go along and see the latest Off the Ball Roadshow with thanks to HeinekenRugbyClub.com. It's on next Thursday at the Stella Theatre in Rathmines. Warren Gatland will be there alongside Jer, Brandon Driscoll and Keith Wood, and we'll give you another chance to win tomorrow night. So busy show tomorrow. Tom Dunn is on the way next.
Give him a ball and a yard of grass, he'll give you a move for the perfect pass. Give him a ball and a yard of spice, he'll give you a move with guilt like your eyes. Rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-